It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello everyone, Stuart Watson here at the Kings of Anglia podcast, and I'm delighted to say today we can bring you a very special interview. Those watching on video will see that I'm joined by Connor Chaplin. An emotional few days for you, Connor Chaplin. Your time at Ipswich Town has come to an end. How are you feeling, my friend?
I feel good. Yeah, it was probably from Friday morning when the news broke. Probably very, very grateful. Was an emotional day Friday, definitely, in terms of messages, social media, and everything that goes around that in terms of leaving the club after a while and a successful spell as well. So, really nostalgic as well. Probably Friday was a nice word in terms of actually having time to look back. I don't really celebrate many things, I'll be honest, in terms of it's always the next thing. But yeah, me and my fiancé did have a bottle of champagne that night and actually talked about our last 5 years and looked back at it, and yeah, that's something that I've probably never done before, so I feel like it was justified this time.
Yeah, I imagine football so day to day, and as you say, next game, you never get to stop and reflect, and we'll try and do a bit of that today, actually. We'll get stuck into some nostalgia, but you mentioned it. I mean, there was plenty of sort of emotion in your farewell message to supporters. Some really touching tributes from colleagues and fans as well. What did that mean to you, reading and hearing all those nice words?
It was incredible. Probably, I mean, you touched on there. Probably the ones from my teammates are the ones that probably always mean the most in terms of they're the lads that you spend every single day with. They're the lads that you go into battle with, you clash with, you have all the memories with, promotion, celebrations with, tough times, good times. I think they're the ones that you really look back on. And probably those comments those ones from the lads, from a special group of lads, they were really special. And then wider than that, I think probably understanding and actually realising the impact that you can have in the community. And I think quite a few people reached out in terms of their own, I've not been able to reply to everyone, but in their own situations and in my own interactions with certain people, where really it does have a big impact on people's lives. And that was special reading as well. So, it was, like I said, an emotional Friday, definitely into Saturday and Sunday in terms of reading the comments and the things that were said.
Let's go back through it then. 5 years at this football club, and we rewind to the day you arrived, July 27th, 2021. You were signed on the same day as the Fridge, George Edmondson. I think you guys were 9-10 out of 19 summer signings, reunited with your former manager, Paul Cook. You dropped down a league from Barnsley, which you admitted at the time maybe seemed a bit silly on the outside, but the ambition of the club was sold to you. What are your memories of that day, that move at the time? What did you know of Ipswich Town as a football club back then?
Firstly, what did I know? Not an awful lot. I'd been to Portman Road once to play, and then once or twice to watch to watch Adam Webster in terms of staying at his for the weekend and watch the game. So probably not an awful lot in terms of the club. Definitely there was a little bit of naivety in terms of the stature of the club. And I know it obviously wasn't the most successful period before I arrived. But really, probably what led in the years after that was, yeah, very, very naive in terms of the stature of the club and the history of the club, which I soon and was keen to learn about very quickly. And then, yeah, it was probably a little bit of a scary summer, that summer for me. I had championship offers that were there. But yeah, in the end, I chose to go to Ipswich. Like I said before, from the outside, looking in was probably a little bit of a silly move, dropping to finishing the playoffs the season before, so with Barnsley. So to drop to a club in League One that hadn't had loads of success over the very recent past was, yeah, probably risky. Probably the best thing to say was risky in terms of a career move, definitely. But I really felt deep down, I had a really good feeling that the club was a club with ambition. It matched a lot of my own ambitions in terms of where I wanted to be as a player, as a professional. And yeah, I like to say it's worked out, and it was a good decision in the end. But at the time, obviously, you never know how it's going to go. And then you think probably the first 2, 3, 4 months, you're thinking, oh no, what's happened? What have I done here? But after that, it was, yeah, maybe since the boss came in, changed everything really.
Yeah, briefly reflect on that sort of tricky start, 19 signings, and took a little while for you guys to gel, didn't it? One of the first things that jumps off the page is your first goal for Ipswich Town. Do you remember it?
Yeah, Sheffield Wednesday one, yeah. Macaulay ball.
Yeah.
Tough to forget that one. No, it was a tough start, a really tough start. A lot of players signed, obviously, a big transition for the football club. There was a certain culture at the football club before we came in terms of professionalism, dedication to training every day, to gym work, to everyday professional life, really, that I wasn't comfortable with. There's a lot of butting heads in terms of the first 4 or 5 months where things didn't align. And as well, there was a lot of players at one time, which is never easy. Never. You can be, and I think we probably were, some of the best players at League One level, but you go into a club all at once, all trying to find houses at the same time, all trying to settle at the same time, and then to actually have the relationships on the pitch as well, it takes time. So it was never going to be, probably looking back, it was never going to be plain sailing for the first season. Yeah, it was a tough time, I think, for the club as well, because there was a lot of excitement around the game changer, ownership coming in, and then the investment in the playing squad. It probably didn't come to fruition until a lot later on down the line.
Yeah. What's going through your mind when Paul Cook goes as manager? Because he's the man who's brought you to the football club. He's someone you'd worked with before. Did you know much about Kieran McKenna when he'd been appointed? Someone who'd obviously not been a manager himself up until that point. Again, is there uncertainty in your mind as a footballer at that stage?
Yeah, of course. I think any of us would be lying if we said we knew much about the boss at that time. It was a hard period, definitely. It was one that probably, I mean, Paul Cook done an incredible job in terms of recruitment that summer. So good at recruiting players for certain levels. And I think that maybe to take the next step was probably a coach to really hone down on the training pitch. I was confident that we had the best players at the level. We just needed to find a way and spend time on the training pitch to help that team become a proper oiled machine. And yeah, like I said, I didn't know much about the boss when that happened. And then probably as soon as he came in, really the training with his coaching staff as well was something that probably straight away I realised I hadn't really experienced before.
Yeah, I always remember the 4-0 win at Gillingham, Connor, early on, where I thought, if this manager can get this out of this group of players this quickly, then something special could be brewing here. How quickly did you realise Kieran McKenna was a special manager?
Yeah, well, he didn't start me the first couple of games, so I wasn't particularly happy with him, to be honest. But he was brilliant with me in that moment, actually, because when Paul Cook left, I think we sort of went a bit more simple. We went with James Norwood and Macaulay Bon up front. probably the Sunderland game at home was the one that Knauss scored. So he kept the same team for a couple of games, but he was brilliant. I think he could realise, in terms of the trainer I was and the player that I was, he knew that I was going to play eventually. He just needed to take a couple of games just to let the lads that had been playing and doing pretty well, to be fair, carry on. And he was always chatting to me through that period, which was as soon as he came in. So that's probably where our, in terms of trust and relationship started, was probably straight away, to be honest.
Special season number one, then, the League One promotion, 29 goals, all competitions for you, League One Golden Boot winner, PFA Players Player of the Year, 7 braces and a single hat trick, and then just that crazy tear up at the end of the season after the January transfer window. I think you guys won 13 of the last 15 games. And just looking at it, you scored in the big wins at Derby, Peterborough and Barnsley, sealed the 6-0 win against Exeter to finish it off. Memories of that season?
Yeah, that's probably... comparing it to the Championship seasons is tough. But it was different. I feel like our team, the manager we had, the players we had, we were a level apart from what we were playing against, definitely. I think we felt that. We knew that. I think a big thing about that season was... obviously the back end of the season, like you talk about, was incredible to play in. You're going into games knowing that if you run more than the opposition, you're going to win the game. I feel like we knew that a lot of the time. We had to come across and overcome certain obstacles during the way, in terms of low blocks. Teams seemed to take their chances against us, in terms of they maybe had a one set piece or a screamer from 20, 30 yards. We learned a lot, an awful lot in those moments, which helped us the back end of the season, definitely. And just tactically, there was a lot of things that the boss changed and the boss realised as well, probably, with his first job and coming into League One as well, which it's not easy, especially when you want to play football and teams are happy to just sit behind the ball and wait for a set piece. But yeah, we learnt a lot, and then I think from January onwards was probably one of the most enjoyable spells of football I've probably ever had, in terms of the 3 or 4 months that followed that, with the signings that we made. Hursty, Broadie, Clarkey, Mass were huge for us in that January, and probably took us to another level, really. I think there's a lot of the lads get the plaudits, but Mass was when Mass got in the team. With Morsey in the middle, it was probably two central midfielders that have know-how but were also a cut above the rest in terms of quality and on the ball and presence, which was huge for us.
Did you just feel invincible going out on the pitch as a player, as a team, at that period of time?
I think that last 4 months, yeah. Like I say, I think we knew, really, with all due respect as well, because we had incredible players for the level. We knew, really, if we worked harder and we ran more than the opposition, then we were going to win 9 times out of 10. So I think that was a big thing for us. We never really spoke about patterns or how we were going to try and win the game as such, in terms of the lads. It was just the non-stop messages were run more, win more tackles, win more duels, win more second balls, and we'll win the game. And then everything that came after that was probably pretty natural to a team that was fully on in their rhythm. In I think we were just seeing training ground patterns come out on a match day, sort of every single move we were seeing patterns come out, and it was, yeah, we were in our flow, definitely.
When you talk about patterns off the training pitch, your trademark goal throughout your time at Ipswich is the cutback, when normally from Leaf down the left, sometimes from Wes down the right. The amount of times you would find yourself in space, heart of the box, precision finish, how much work goes into that on the training pitch? How much repetition and practice?
Yeah, a lot. The finish, probably, especially both sides, because as soon as it went down both sides, really, Leaf, whether it was Leaf, Broadie or Wes, JD, Clarkey, whoever it was, I know that in their head and the team was looking for that space to pull the ball back to. And I definitely missed a few for sure, but I probably had that much practice on the training pitch and then in game as well, which it just became a bit of a routine finish in the end. And it was a pattern that we worked on a lot. And there's an awful lot of things that probably people from the terraces don't see and the uncoached eye don't see in moves like that, which is probably your Hursty and people like that. Such unselfish people, especially for a number nine to be happy with me scoring the majority of the goals and then making pretty much sacrificial runs says a lot about the humility of the group and to why we were so successful, I think. The selflessness of the group, the willing to do whatever it was for the team was special. That's not that normal at all. Hursty was unbelievable. There were sometimes, and the boss was brilliant to be fair, because he give Hursty a lot of food sometimes in terms of meetings, and that would make sure that he says, like, look, the flash across the goal will be on today, just to make Hursty keep going and going and going, because it must be tough when you're running every time and he knows why he's doing it. But he used to say to me, I got with Hursty incredibly well, so I was very lucky we had that relationship, but he just used to say to me, mate, I'll run every time, as long as you're there, I'll run every time, don't worry about it. Luckily he got his fair share of goals as well, but would never have been able to score that amount of goals from that situation without him, without Brody as well, making unselfish runs in terms of in the box, not crowding the area where I was. Marcus as well, I think there's a lot of lads that, yeah, massively unselfish people. But I think as a team, we knew that was pretty much nearly a bang on goal if we got it right. So we just kept doing it and kept doing it. And yeah, I think it's easy to say why was it never picked up, but it's hard for teams when they're dragged all over the place, and the way we were playing at the time, with the speed we were doing it, with the athleticism of Leaf and Wes, how quickly they got to the ball and cut it back, to actually realise and pick up was tough for teams.
You've name checked a few of your teammates in there already. The phrase band of brothers has been used plenty of times to sort of talk about that group. You've been described as sort of a standard setter, a culture setter. You've already talked about how that maybe started to change in the first few months of your time at the club. How important is that to you, and what does that look like day to day, that sort of behind the scenes when you talk about sort of standards and club culture and all those sort of things, and how important is it?
How important to me is probably the most important in terms of the culture you live by every day, and the standards that you set every day. Just because I think you can't control in football, you can't control the high moments, the low moments. You can't control when they're going to come, but what you can control is your reaction to them every day. You can control how you are when it's good, how you are when it's not so good, and I think that can't change if you want to be successful in a team during a season. I don't think those standards and those cultures can change or fluctuate through form, especially when I mean, for a club like Ipswich as well, with a big following, fans vocal on social media, if it's not going so well, so probably scenarios where I can speak about when, probably in both promotion seasons really, I mean, a lot of people think about the Bristol Rovers game away in League One as being a pivotal point, and it probably was, definitely. But when there's moments like that, and then similar time in the season, the Championship season, the January to February time, when we started a little bit, we didn't lose a lot of games, but we were drawing quite a few games. If you can block that out and be really consistent with what you expect from your teammates, what you expect from the staff, and then holding those standards down and living by them every single day, I think it just stops the fluctuation in what you're doing, in form, in training. It keeps you in control a lot more. So if you have that, and Mark and the boss were incredible at that in terms of setting out what that was and how that looked. And then we had an incredible group of senior players that lived that every day. and held people to account. And it got to a point where, in the end, you didn't really have to do much. The group led itself. And we had that for probably, two years, I'd say, which was, I've never felt anything like it in terms of the way you feel for the staff, the way you feel for the players that you're playing with. It was different. It was different to anything I've ever experienced. It was special. It's just a real desperation need to help people around you. That came from everyone. It was, I can't say it any more clear than that. It was a special group of people. And I think reflecting on it as well, if you'd have had that same season with a different set of lads, a different set of staff, if you've had that 2 years, I still don't think it would have been special without the personalities and the humans that we had inside the building. I genuinely believe that it was all about the people that you shared a journey with, and those people were top people.
Well, I mean, we see evidence of it during 90 minutes of a weekend, and we can see how much, maybe players that don't get as much game time really buy into it as substitutes or being ready when called upon. And, we see that side of things. But can you maybe shine a light on behind the scenes kind of how that plays out? You talked earlier about maybe butting heads at times in the early days. What are you like behind the scenes? Are you someone that demands a lot from people? Is it sometimes just being quite calm and keeping people on a level, which you've already touched upon? Sort of give me a flavour of what that sort of culture looks like, at Playford Road day to day.
Yeah, you have to ask other people in terms of what they think. But I think probably for myself, I understand I'm a really demanding teammate in terms of training level. I'm big on training in terms of the level that I want to be at every day. And I expect that of the teammates around me as well. I think we really had a good... I don't think in that period teams out-trained us or outworked us or had a better mentality to training or better mentality to set pieces. I really do believe that. And that came from a few. Skip was unbelievable at that as well. Every single day. And I think probably lads did look at me and Skip in terms of the way we trained every day and realised that, if I'm 4% off it today, then they're going to tell me, and they'll tell me in front of everyone, which I don't want, so I'm at it. And then just the competitiveness as well. I think every single day, and I'm not saying this because it sounds like a good thing to say. I'm saying it because we lived it. The competitiveness was crazy, was absolutely crazy in terms of wanting to win every day, small-sided games, being on a winning picture in training at the end of training. It was a lot, and a lot of times it spilled over. Definitely, there was a lot of times where it was some bad tackles, some scraps in training. But that was what was so special about the group, is it never ever went into the dressing room. Everyone realised that we were animals when we were training, when we were on the pitch. And as soon as we went to the dressing room, there was a handshake and a cuddle, and then everyone would have a laugh about it afterwards. Probably, I don't know, what can I, probably an example I could say is on a Thursday, we'd have a set piece day, like probably more of a down day. So we'd train Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, have a down day on Thursday, but it was a set piece day where our mentality for set pieces had to be locked in. But before that, pretty much every Thursday we do a head tennis tournament in the dome. And there was lads doing all sorts, grazes on their knees from the Astro, bicycle kicks on the Astro just to win. It was amazing. It was a special group. And then we had that competitiveness, and then the ability of the group to just switch like that into set piece mode and have to be dialed in. It's not physical load, but it's mental load in terms of knowing what we're coming up against the weekend and switching straight into understanding what it takes and how important it is to dial into things like that and to really as a group upheld standards on that. There was no one doing keepy ups on the side of the pitch, or which you see everywhere. There was none of that at all. Everyone was super dialed in, and he was expected to be as well from staff and players.
Yeah, and then momentum carries into the championship. Externally, whenever we spoke to any of you guys, the manager, it was, we're not putting any limits on what we can do, but we're not setting anything. We're just, it's an improvement mindset, a development mindset, and we'll see where it takes us. In the back of your mind, did you think that you could do something special going into that year, given how well you'd finished the previous season? Or take me back to that summer. What were you thinking going into the championship?
Yeah, to be honest, probably, I know you said the external messages, but that was very much internal as well. It generally was the internal messages, and that came from the boss, and it filtered down through the group. There was definitely no ceiling to what we could achieve, but there was never, and I'm talking right into January, February, March, there was never talk of promotion in terms of the boss's meetings or much speak around that in terms of the P word. There wasn't much of that at all. And that helped as well. That helped deal with the emotional roller coaster of a season like that. But that's one of the boss's massive strengths is keeping everyone right where they need to be at any given time. Reading the room incredibly well every single post-match, straight after the game in the change room on a Saturday, on a Monday, again, reading the room incredibly well, really realising exactly what the lads needed at that point in time. And he always hit the nail on the head with the atmosphere in the room, with the lads needed a confidence boost in terms of the meeting. If we need a little bit of a rocket, it was, yeah, he got absolutely everything nailed on all the time. But that's a skill in itself. Yeah, in terms of post-season and pre-season, we had a really good pre-season. Obviously, we had the cup win in pre-season as well over Leipzig and teams like that, and we thought, wow, we play some good stuff here. We're a good side, playing against top players, and that just carried, like you say, that just carried. The momentum was amazing. We always did feel a little bit of what's the word? I don't think offence, but we always found a little bit of naivety from other people's managers or players when they spoke about our momentum, because it sort of overrided the fact that we were a really good team. We played some really good stuff in terms of coming up against teams. We could blow teams away, and that's in the championship, stepping up with probably 11 starters that started in League One the season before. So we did feel that as well, and we were sort of, long may that continue. If they want to keep talking about that and just put it down to momentum, then crack on. But yeah, there was probably two split seasons in the championship season. I think probably got to November until teams really started to respect and think, oh yeah, they're a really good team. So we were probably having really good games with teams until that time, where teams were just coming at us and having a football match, and at times we always came out on top majority of the time, and then probably. Yeah, just before Christmas time, end of November, December time, teams started to set up differently against us in terms of back fours, back fives, trying to really stifle what we were doing. But we were just so well tuned that if we come up against a back four, we know we're doing this, we know we're doing these movements, we know we're trying to get in these spaces, we know we're pressing here, and we know we're pressing there. And if we come up in a back five, we knew the solutions like that. Or if we didn't know the solutions and we started the game pretty tough, then I'd sit down after 10 minutes and the boss would let us know exactly the solutions after 10 minutes of the game. And it was...
It's amazing how many little injuries you got midway through the first half, Connor.
And you know what, as well, I don't think a lot of commentators watch our games, but I think a lot of times when I watched them back, a lot of people were worried that I was going to have to come off, and I was like, nah, man, just do this every time. It's just trying to figure out the tactical bits in the game.
Those little chats midway through the first half, how much can you get from the manager in terms of, like, tactically, okay, they've set up slightly different to what we're expecting, this is how we tweak it. Can that really change the course of games?
100%. That happened loads of times for us. I think, trying to think of examples. I think we had, I can't remember what team it was. Either QPR or Birmingham, because Andre Dezel was playing at home. I think it might have been a night game as well. And that's one example where we couldn't get the ball off them. Our press was wrong. They set up differently to how we thought. The first 10, 15 minutes, we couldn't get the ball off them. They were popping around us and we couldn't get anywhere near them. But it's tactical, little tactical bits that the boss gives you. It's literally just maybe 5 or 10 yards in the starting position for Wes, say, to threaten the left centre half, or in possession, it's me dropping out to the touchline to receive a bit lower off of Clarkey or Axel. Yeah, there was little tweaks where the spare man was. He'd identify where the spare man was and where we were going to get out and build up straight away. And then as soon as we found that out, we were all had clarity in our heads and we'd find a spare man, because we know how to do that with the patterns that we trained every single day.
I always hear you're a football obsessive, Connor. Somebody who studies the game, loves the game. Certainly we hear that about Kieran McKenna as well. What are the two of you like when you get together in a room and you're talking football? Does it get pretty in depth? Do you love discussing the game and the nuances of it and everything?
Yeah, it does. But when someone like me is talking to someone like him, I just listen. There's nothing that I can say that he doesn't know. I'm just learning from him. Now, we'd always talk about, every morning we'd come in and there was a game, we'd always talk about the game that was on the night before, if he wasn't watching our games from previous or games that he had to watch for the teams we had coming up. Then if he did watch the game on the telly, we'd chat about it, chat about the tactical side of it, both each other's opinions. But no, for when you're speaking to someone like him, it's just listen. Just listen and see what he thinks about the game and think, oh yeah, I didn't see that, or I didn't realise that. He make a really good point in terms of some of the things that he sees. And obviously he's a genius like that in terms of the way that he sees tactical pitches and things like that. So yeah, it's just a lot of listening to what he had to say, really.
13 goal joint top goal scorer with Brodie that season, winners versus QPR, Sheffield Wednesday, Sunderland, that was a header, wasn't it? Swansea, Blackburn on Good Friday. That felt like quite a pivotal moment. Favourite moment, favourite goal in that season?
It's probably two that I think about, but the Sunderland one was a big goal. Felt it at the time. Skip wasn't playing either, so I was captain that night, and that was a really proud moment. I think that might have been one of the first times I was. So it was, I felt a lot of responsibility in terms of, I always felt responsibility in terms of the goals and the output in terms of goals and assists. But that night, it was really pivotal, and it was a goal that probably goes down a little bit to the genius of Leaf's left foot. A lot of people talk about the header, but the quality and the delivery, and people think that it wasn't necessarily aimed for me, but if people watch the goal back, and I mean, I could probably, I could say it now, it happened a lot of the time. I think Fridge was playing that night, and Fridge blocked sort of two of their players to stop them coming to the second line, because it wasn't, trust me, if Leaf's hitting the second line for a free kick, he's meant to, he's not done it by accident. So he's hit the second line, he's not put it on top of their line defending the free kick, and I was stood there, didn't move, someone like Leaf and the relationship I have with Leaf, we haven't got to speak about that. It's more of a if he's looking in my eyes and I can see his eyes, then we're just sort of gesturing to each other, I'm standing right here, mate, just put it on my head. And he did, and I told Fridge before the free kick, just block as many people as you can, and no one could get out to me because Fridge done the mate. I think he had two or three lads that he was just pushing into the goal. No one could jump to me, and Leaf just put it on my head, and it was an easy header. The quality of delivery from Leaf, and that's where the little details that maybe the untrained eye doesn't see with Fridge is pretty much as good an assist, blocking three players, leaving it to me. So. that's probably speaks as well as, yeah, the humility of the group. You have a big centre half like Fridge that thinks, oh, it's a set piece here. I want to come over the top of someone and score. And I'm saying to him, 5 seconds before the free kick's taken, you're not heading it. Just block these three for me, the smallest man on the pitch. And he trusts that, and he does it straight away. So it's, yeah, it's a big, big testament to the group and shows exactly why we were so successful.
Yeah, out the way. Let the big man get on the end of this one. I like it. We have to talk about the Sarmiento goal, Southampton, and you darting across the pitch in your coat, having just been substituted a few minutes before. Have you ever run that fast in your life? That feels like a real iconic moment. I think looking back at it, you were one of the first people on the scene for the bundle, weren't you? That was an incredible moment.
Oh, no, yeah. Crazy. crazy. Yeah, that was one of those, I think. Such a big game. And we knew it was a pivotal game going into it. Obviously, the game started well. Leaf scored a great goal. And it was a really good footy match, I think, for anyone watching, was a really good footy match. Two really good teams at a time, two really good teams at a level. Yeah, and it was such a big moment in our season, right towards the business end of the season as well, where I think maybe if we'd have won that one, they couldn't have caught us, or it was a big goal anyway. But yeah, it's probably one of those out of body experiences, that one. I think it just helped that it was Southampton as well, which I don't particularly like. So it was one of them that was, yeah, amazing. As soon as the goal went in, you know, just it's one of those ones that you can't really control yourself. You just sort of go with it. Yeah.
Incredible moment in an incredible season. The celebrations at the end of it were quite something. I remember speaking to you at Playford Road, I think before the open top bus went off to Christchurch Park, and you soaked it all in. I think you knew that was a moment in time then, but immediately your thoughts turned to the Premier League. I could see a bit of steeliness in you that you were ready for the Premier League. How do you reflect on that season in the top flight for you? Because, you know, you started that amazing opening day against Liverpool where the noise and the colour and the vibrancy was amazing. You get yourself back in the team around sort of winter time. That big penalty shout against Leicester, still don't know how you didn't get that. You get your goal against Bournemouth to join that sort of exclusive club of players that have scored in all of the top four divisions. And then you have the knee injury setback that kind of robs you of the chance to play at the likes of Anfield, Old Trafford. That Premier League season, how now, with a bit of time behind it, how do you reflect on it, Connor?
I probably haven't done massively, to be honest, is reflect on it. But, yeah, it was one that I probably knew going into the season that, right, I'm going to have to be number one, the fittest I've ever been. I'm going to be up against it here in terms of playing as much as I want to play. I knew we were signing Amari, and I knew the boss saw him playing more as a number 10 rather than the right winger. And I thought we were probably going to sign another one to play in that position as well. So I knew that I had to really give it everything I had. And I came back in probably the best physical condition that I've ever been for that season. And I knew as well, I knew with the boss seeing Amari playing now, I knew that I'd get chances to play because, number one, Amari's young. He had a few little knocks at the time, so I knew that he wasn't going to play 38 games or whatever it is. So I knew that I'd get chances. I also knew that the boss would look at me to help Mars a lot as well, which I felt was a big responsibility of mine because he's a really good kid, really good player. I think you're seeing that now with Forrest in the way he's performing. But also, yeah, I felt like I'd get chances. But I knew that I wasn't going to be a guaranteed starter, which was different to the 3 years previous, which I was happy with that. It was the Premier League. It was the top level. I would never take that for granted. So, there's a lot of pride that comes from it, definitely. I really do believe that probably around the time that I scored my goal and we played I can't remember exactly in the order, but I think we played Leicester, Bournemouth, Nottingham Forest, and there was one more. There was probably a 4-game period where at Premier League level, I felt like a good player. I felt like I was influencing games. I felt like I was one of the most dangerous players on the pitch, and that's probably the best I've felt football wise in that 4-game period. I really felt like I was affecting games. My physical output was really good for the level, so I knew that I was physically able to do it. I was never going to necessarily run away from people with speed or pace, but I've never really relied on that. But it was more about high speed running and defensive attributes. And I felt like I was a really good player at the level for that at that 4-game period. And then really shortly after, I'd done my knee on. It was so innocuous as well in training, blocking a cross, just opened up my MCL, and I had probably never felt completely comfortable with it for the rest of the season after that. And that was New Year's Day I'd done that, so really struggled with coming back from it. Anyone that's ever had an MCL injury would know that. I've never really had injuries, touch wood, and your knee is probably one that is the worst to have of all, really. Struggled with how it felt coming back. Could never really kick the ball properly with my right foot for the rest of the season after that. But I came back and I started a few games after that. In my head, I knew if I was 5-10% off it at that level, then it was never going to be easy for me. I needed to be at my very maximum. And I probably felt like I only really had that for maybe a 4 or 5 game stretch. The injury, obviously, looking back, was a big disappointment, because I really think I would have played a lot more, because I think Amari got injured in the December, January time or February time whilst I was injured. So that was another big thing as well. I would have had a lot more games there. One of pride for sure, but one of a little bit of, a little bit gutted in terms of the injury, and never really had any injuries before. And then I get probably a 3.5 month injury in the middle of probably the biggest season that I've ever had. But I don't know. But I also lived the dream and scored a goal in the Premier League, and will have that for the rest of my life. So, extreme amount of pride. Relief as well that I could score. If I went through the season and didn't score, I'd have been absolutely devastated. Just thankfully that I did.
I've had that conversation with a certain Wes Burns recently, who says that's one of his bugbears, that he hasn't joined that Premier League goal scorer club, and that's going to be a big part of his decision this summer. I mean, I can't not speak to you, Connor, without talking about Wes. A bit of a bromance between you two. What's your relationship like?
Yeah, he's just a beautiful person. Like, inside and out, I just think he's great. Just such a good character for any dressing room. Very serious guy when it comes to training and the way he applicates himself, but also has such a good balance for squad dynamic. Can talk to absolutely anyone socially within the squad. So good in terms of going, and each little bit of the squad can chat and make everyone laugh, and and off the pitch he was amazing for the group, really amazing. A lot of people gravitate towards him in terms of the way he is, bubbly, funny, and just an amazing person. And then on the pitch, and I've said it to Wes as well, I felt like it was important for him to know. I've said it to him a lot. I genuinely don't think that I'd have had the career I've had in the last 3 or 4 years if it wasn't for him. I think he's made me look a lot better player than what I maybe could have ever looked before. The telepathy that we had on the pitch in terms of the way each other played, what we wanted from each other, I've never experienced with anyone else ever. He's probably the most understanding I've ever had with any teammate. Is Leaf is very close in terms of Leaf giving me the ball. But I was obviously a lot closer to Wes a lot more of the time, actually talking in game as well, because we were so close on the pitch. But yeah, my passes to him, I don't think that 95% of people would run when I'm not even looking at him. I'm looking the other way. I've not told him. I've not looked at him once, but I'm putting it in the space that he wants to go in. His understanding of me and my understanding of him was probably the best I've ever had for any teammate ever. I think we could probably both say that we made each other a lot better players than we ever had been before.
Yeah. I won't dwell too much on the season just gone, because I think that the circumstances of you going to Portsmouth on loan on deadline day have been sort of fairly well explained. You've spoken quite openly about how this season's been for you, a little parting gift for Ipswich with your goal at Middlesbrough. I'm sure you got a few text messages that night from people here. It brings us to this point, Connor, with a new chapter for you and the next chapter for Ipswich Town. Two questions. Can Ipswich stay up next season? And what next for you, my friend?
Yeah, absolutely they can. I think we're in a much better spot than we were a couple of years ago when we got promoted. So I think we absolutely can, especially with the group and the management staff that is there. I've got every faith. Recruitment's obviously going to be a big thing, same as every season, none more so than when you go to the Premier League. So, but yeah, without a doubt they can. I think you've seen it this season, with Leeds, with Sunderland, the way that it can go. So, yeah, without a doubt. And secondly, yeah, I'm not too sure yet. It's still early days. It's only recently been publicised. There's a few things, but I'm not going to take anything or sort of definitely go with anything without waiting a little bit and seeing what's there. So. No, I'm excited for another chapter, definitely. I'm obviously sad to leave Ipswich and the air and the town and all the relationships there, but look, nothing lasts forever. I feel very blessed and grateful that I've had 5 years of incredible memories and relationships. But yeah, it's one that needs to be excited for the next one, and whatever the next one is, go all in on that and see where it takes me.
Yeah, Suffolk's got a huge place in your heart forevermore, hasn't it? Ipswich Town, you've talked about, your boys are going to grow up Ipswich fans when they're older and stuff like that. It's I bet you didn't think that this club was going to maybe have this lasting impact on you. What does Ipswich Town mean to you, Connor?
Good question. It's an emotional place for me for probably the rest of my life, in terms of so many big events in my life have happened there. The best events in my life professionally have happened there by far. So I have the attachment in that aspect as well. Everything that goes around, all the memories with the promotions, the bus parades, everything like that, all the Isaacs after getting promoted, the championship season the first time, everything like that. And then personally as well, our two sons were born there in the hospital. We got engaged in Suffolk. We have a family house in Suffolk that we absolutely loved. And it was somewhere that I never ever missed home. I never missed being at home, because we generally felt like Suffolk and Ipswich was home. If we had 2 days off, we would never come back down south. We'd always stay in Ipswich because we wanted to be there. We loved the house. We loved our boys being where they were born. And I'm just really, really, probably looking back now, I'm really, really glad that the boys were born there, because I had such an amazing time professionally there, and it just cements, we'll always have a tie and a reason to be in Ipswich for the rest of our lives, because my boys will definitely be Ipswich fans. They've not really got a choice. They don't know yet, but they've not really got a choice. They were born there, so they'll support Ipswich, and Hopefully we can have some more good memories for them growing up fans as well.
I've taken a lot of your time, Connor. I just want to finish by saying, I guess personally, thank you. And on behalf of all the Ipswich Town fans, you played a big key role in a bit of a rebirth period for this football club. There was a bleak few years leading up to the takeover, and you know, the group that you guys became, and the connection that you refostered with the community has left a bit of a legacy, and it's made my job a lot more fun over the last few years, and you've put smiles on faces. So I guess as an extension from all the supporters, really, thank you for everything and all the very best for the next chapter for you and the family.
Thank you, Shu. That's very kind, mate. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your time, mate. Crack on with the rest of your day, and all the best. Cheers, Connor.
Cheers, Shu. Thanks, mate. Take care.
Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.